Today is April 18th, 2009, and this is the Apple Weekly Report, episode number 145, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor for TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, scallywag. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit MacObserver.com/AWR. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at AWR@MacObserver.com. And feel free to follow me on Twitter. I'm at TM O'Brien. That's TMOBRYAN.
And you can follow me on Twitter if you're so inclined. I'm at JGamet, and that's JGamet.
Good stuff. You know, my Mac broke this week.
It did. And I felt so bad for you because a broken Mac really is a sad thing.
It is a sad thing, and it was kind of annoying. And it just kind of came out of nowhere. It turned out to be the logic board, and they replaced the video card too, although I'm not sure which, like, I guess what they told me was it ended up being the video card, but we replaced your logic board anyway. Like, all right, rock on.
Sweet dude.
But yeah, the funny thing about this, and this is why I actually mentioned this here in the, up front in the show, is that they called me. First of all, they had it fixed in less than 24 hours.
That's pretty impressive.
And they would be, in this case, the Apple Store itself. I took it to the Genius Bar and the Valley Fair Apple Store. And when they called me to tell me it was ready, I was literally publishing. I was copying it from Go Live, where I wrote it, into our publishing engine. A story about Apple being tops in customer service of all the computer companies that Forrester did. And I just thought it very appropriate that that's what I was doing when they called, because I think that having it fixed in less than 24 hours is great.
Yeah, that's very cool. And then, of course, the incredible timing of you posting a news story about Apple customer service as you're getting that good customer service call.
Yeah.
and I want to point out, though, that I'm really impressed, Brian, because I think you're the only person I know that's actually still using Go Live.
You know, when I was whining about Go Live on Twitter, I had a couple of people ping me with notes about what's that app?
Probably Freeway.
Freeway. People saying that they like Freeway and stuff. So I mean, I definitely struck a chord. We actually got a little bit of correspondence from the last whine that I made about Adobe just botching Go Live so badly.
Yeah, you know, I remember the good old days when the company was Go Live and the product was Cyber Studio.
Cyber Studio was amazing.
It was. And when they told me that they were being bought by Adobe and they seemed so excited, I just had to bite my tongue, because what I wanted to say is, oh, dudes, you're about to have your whole dream shattered, because this is going to become a very different thing.
Yeah, you know, I didn't really get optimism when I talked to them. I had a pretty good relationship with the Go Live people, and they once told me that I was the only one that seemed to really understand what the product was about. But which, you know, may or may not have been true. But my actual point was that I got a sort of, we know that our dreams are about to be shattered kind of feel from them.
Okay, so maybe what I heard, it was in the context of the meeting itself, and it was in a situation where it had to be a positive spin.
Yeah, it could have been. Could have been. You know, and I would be happy. Dreammaker is a great dreammaker.
Dreamweaver.
Heartbreaker, dream... Anyway, so yeah, Dreamweaver. Dreamweaver is a great development app, I think, in terms of actually doing your coding for HTML and CSS. But what I like about Go Live is, of course, the project manager.
That is really cool.
And there's just no reason for them not to take the Go Live project manager and incorporate it into Dreamweaver. Then I get the best of both worlds. Everybody gets the best of both worlds.
Yeah, that would be cool. That would be very cool. So maybe we'll get that in CS5.
I don't think so. I think that Adobe has too many Windows people making decisions. That's what I really think. I'll just say it. They've got too many Windows people making decisions about the products. That's what I think.
you know, maybe we should make a trip to San Jose and talk to them.
Maybe we should, except for the fact that, you know, I'm supposed to be the objective journalist, not the person finding fault with everything.
That's called editorializing.
Yes, excellent. I like it.
All right.
All right. Well, on that happy note, I guess we should get to the show.
I think so. Apple ranked first in a Forrester customer service report, even though some don't like higher iTunes prices. The iPhone is a win for the enterprise. AT&T is hoping to extend its exclusive iPhone contract. The Mac is still gaining market share. Germany's iTunes store is showing movies. And PowerBooks, apparently, are a fur trade for kidneys. In other exciting news, World of Warcraft 3.10 is out, which means we probably won't see or hear from Brian for at least another week. Apple gained market share with its Macintosh line of computers in the United States during the March quarter, even though sales were off year over year, according to research firm IDC. For the quarter, Apple sold some 1.13 million Macs in the U.S., and while down from the 1.44 million units IDC reported for Q1 2008, the market as a whole dipped far more than Apple's sales, representing a market share gain for the company, up from 7.4% in 2008 to 7.6% in 2009. So in other words, Apple is not only holding its own in a down economy where people had been predicting doom and gloom over Apple's luxury pricing, the company gained on its rivals.
Nice. The price hike to $1.29 US for certain tracks at the iTunes store seems to have had an immediate effect. Many of the higher priced tracks aren't selling as well as they were before the increase. After only 2 days with higher prices, Billboard noted that the newly inflated tracks were losing chart positions to 99 cent tracks. The day after the price increase went into effect, songs priced at $1.29 lost an average of 5.3 places on the chart, and songs priced at 99 cents gained an average of 2.5 places. Moving into Thursday, the trend continued with 53.99 cent songs climbing an average of 1.66 places on the chart, and 47 songs costing $1.29 losing 2 chart positions. That's amazing. While 2 days worth of data doesn't necessarily indicate a trend, and it really probably doesn't, but we'll get to that in the context machine, it does show that at least for now, customers prefer the 99 cent track price point. If the sales pattern continues, the resistance to $1.29 tracks could start having a negative effect on already dropping record label profits, which is exactly what the labels don't want, but are too stupid to figure out, said one executive. I have a gear on his short month now. I know you weren't expecting that one, Jeff. And what my note to myself was, said one executive, offensive quote. And I think I managed to be remarkably offensive there.
I think so. Holy crap. Okay. All right. Let's see if I can follow that up. Oh, my God. After following 3 enterprise-level companies' attempts at adding the iPhone to their corporate mix, those companies being Kraft Foods, Oracle, and Amlin Pharmaceuticals, Forrester Research concluded that the iPhone makes for a nice fit in big business. Analyst Ted Shadler from Forrester commented, quote, the iPhone's intuitive interface, superior browsing experience, and rapidly evolving developer toolkit make content-centric applications far more appealing on an iPhone than on a BlackBerry or Windows mobile device. While BlackBerry is still the email and calendaring winner, iPhone devotees do make the shift to typing on glass, unquote. Despite a few limitations, like limited Exchange and VPN support compared to the BlackBerry, the iPhone looks to be holding its own in the corporate world, at least with some companies. And once iPhone Software 3.0 ships, however, Apple may be able to grab even more of the enterprise market, since the iPhone will gain even more competitive features, all without costing current customers anything.
AT&T has been Apple's exclusive partner for the iPhone in the U.S. since the device was first released, and the cell carrier is hoping to keep its exclusive deal past 2010. The agreement the two companies struck before the iPhone was launched expires next year, putting AT&T CEO Randall Stephenson on the move to swing a new exclusive deal that runs at least through 2011 and will surely cost the company dearly. Landing a new exclusive deal with Apple would likely be a big win for AT&T. The carrier added 4.3 million iPhone customers in the second half of 2008, and about 40% of those were new to AT&T. Those are substantial numbers, very substantial, especially since the company is pushing its wireless services over its traditional landline services. Mr. Stephenson isn't talking about the terms of AT&T's deal with Apple or about the current negotiations. Apple is equally tight-lipped, although a company spokesperson did comment, quote, "We have a great relationship with AT&T, and besides, we can always use another kidney," unquote.
Okay.
Oh, so true.
Yes. Apple crushed its PC competition in the area of customer service in a new survey conducted by Forrester Research. In a blog post, Bruce Temkin, who conducted the survey for Forrester, said that Apple beat out Compaq, Gateway, HP, and Dell, and was the number one PC vendor in all three categories the survey examined. Apple was given a good rating with an 80% score in the survey. The company's closest competitor, Gateway, was a distant second with a 66% score, while HP scored a 64%, Compaq a 63%, and Dell, well, Dell got a 58%.
Oh, the audience is...
I don't think our studio audience liked that. No. Now, there is no word yet on whether Dell's leadership will be selling the company's assets and returning the money to its shareholders. Okay, it seems our audience likes that.
Yeah. Apple's iTunes store in Germany added movie rentals and purchases to its feature set on April 16th. Movies from Paramount Pictures, Warner Brothers Pictures, MGM, the Walt Disney Studio, and Sony Pictures Television, and more are available now with prices starting at €2 and then 99 parts of a euro for rentals. Does anyone know what the equivalent of a penny is? Tell us if you do. iTunes Store movies in Germany launched with some 500 titles available. Movies are priced at €7.99 for catalog titles, €9.99 for recent releases, €13. They cost euros and stuff. Adding movie rentals and purchases to the iTunes store in Germany could also make Apple TV a more enticing purchase in the country, since users can order movies directly from the home entertainment appliance, potentially giving Apple a boost in sales in that country.
And I'll start this story with a question. What would you trade for a Mac? Your most valuable baseball card? Issue number one of your favorite comic? 20 shares of Apple, 200 shares of Dell, or how about a kidney? Well, for one man, it was the latter. When he donated one of his kidneys to his sister, she asked him what she could get for him. His answer, a PowerBook. And this was back in the late 1990s, and the story came to us in the form of an anecdote in a PC World column written by Phil Shapiro asking why Apple doesn't use more senior citizens in its ad. But it was the kidney PowerBook story that really stood out for us.
Indeed, although Mr. Shapiro's point is kind of interesting.
Yes, it is.
The week's biggest news has simply got to be the release of, wait for it, World of Warcraft 3.10, a content patch for the multiplayer online role-playing game that brings, you know, these really exciting stuff here. Swimming mounts, ooh, dual talent specs, limited testing for Ulduar, that's a raid instance, a talent reset, and more. There's class and profession and achievement and PvP stuff, and, well, really, there's just more changes than you can shake a stick at. There are also some Mac-specific fixes and changes, including bug fixes, support for some Logitech gaming keyboards, and support for the new ultra-quality graphics that make the game look much better if your hardware can support it. And, oh, this just in. In related World of Warcraft news, I passed the 60,000 gold piece mark, making my tune filthy rich.
filthy rich, you say?
Call the game. Or World of Auction House. That's my little joke there.
Just so you know, when I picture you playing World of Warcraft, it looks exactly like the South Park episode.
Oh, no. All right, that sound means that it's time for the Context Machine. That's where Jeff and I delve a little more deeply into the news to provide context for what's going on. And, first of all, you've got the World of Warcraft thing. That's huge.
Yeah, that was huge.
It actually is a really cool patch. You know, if you haven't played World of Warcraft, it's a very fun game. And it certainly looks great with the new graphics changes they made. Just saying.
And I just have to add, when I was reading the notes for mm-hmm. that article mm-hmm. where you say new ultra quality graphics, mm-hmm. I really thought it said ultra gravy graphics.
Well, you know, gravy is an important element to the game.
I think it's one of the food groups, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So about those price hikes at iTunes.
Yeah, that's not nearly as much fun as the World of Warcraft thing. No. And, of course, we knew these were coming because Phil Schiller told all of us about this during his keynote presentation at Macworld Expo in January.
Yeah. And we knew it was coming, and we talked about how it was devastating, that it was a stupid move.
And what a surprise. It turns out that tracks that cost $1.29 are not selling as well as they did when they were 99 cents.
Yep. Now, there's a couple of issues there. First of all, are they not selling enough, if I'm bordering on double negatives here, let me rephrase this. I would be surprised if the labels weren't still making more money despite the lower sales.
It wouldn't surprise me if you are correct on that.
But I think that it is a demonstration of how they are flawed, because making more money out of fewer sales is not to their long-term benefit or the long-term benefit of the artists.
No, it's not. And, clearly, at some point, this will have a negative impact on them because they're going to start seeing, the problems that come along with not selling as much.
Yeah. I mean,
they're losing volume sales.
Yeah, it's true. And every time they lose a sale, that's a little less mind share that people have for music when it comes to spending their entertainment dollars.
Yes. And I look at the $1.29 price point as a big problem also, because it's a psychological jump. When you're below a dollar at 99 cents, it's much easier for people to impulse buy. And
yeah, it's that magic line.
Yeah. And at $1.29, okay, granted, that's not a lot of money in the grand scheme of things. But from a psychological standpoint, okay, now you have to think more about what you're spending, and there's different math involved, and it's suddenly more than a dollar.
Yeah, it's suddenly more than a dollar. And, you know, I think that I'm going to work this out right here live, because this thought just occurred to me. But I think that one of the problems of the music industry right now is not market share, and it's not sales, and it is mind share, what we were talking about a couple of minutes ago. And I think that that's probably the number one challenge to the labels, is regaining mind share when it comes to those entertainment dollars. I don't think anything is more important than that. The more I think about it here, and these price hikes are going to decrease mind share, not increase it.
I fear you are right. And I also fear this means that people that otherwise would have been buying their music mm-hmm. will now be more likely to turn to, shall we call them, unauthorized avenues gathering their songs.
Yeah, well, it will certainly be an excuse for some bottom feeders to
oh, sure.
to go ahead and either resume or increase or return to piracy. It will, I mean, you know, this will be a great excuse for a lot of thieves to continue thieving.
Sad to say, but I believe you are correct on that.
But I don't know that, except for the people that are returning to thieving, that's not really much of a market share or mind share loss for the labels. But
well, true. The people that weren't going to pay for music to begin with and aren't going to pay for it now, that doesn't change anything for the labels.
No, not really, except for the fact that they've just made it that much harder to ever get those people.
Yes, they have.
Which is why I'm always screaming and ranting and raving about making music cheaper, not more expensive.
Yeah, and I'm thinking that this tiered price structure that Apple is working with now, that had to have been a hard pill for Apple to swallow. But it wouldn't surprise me if this is the compromise Apple had to make to make sure that the labels stayed on board, because I have no doubt what the labels really want is Apple to just dump the per track you buy it model and switch over to a subscription model, which the labels think is the best thing ever. And consumers have shown over and over that they don't want that.
Right. Right. You know what? Before we launch into a 20-minute tirade on this subject, let's just, we said a lot of this stuff before. It just drives me nuts. And I'll close with this. 1 week doesn't mean crap in terms of, you know, whether or not this is really a trend. This is just an initial reaction. And my guess is that people will come to accept the $1.29 price point. But that's not the point. The point is they're going to lose mindshare. The point is they are going to mindshare. And that is why this is wrong. I don't care if they make a little bit more money on this in the short term. In the long term, they're causing themselves problems.
Yeah, I'm thinking that in the long term, this will cost the labels on their bottom line.
Yeah. Now, speaking of which, speaking of market share and mind share, and I'm sorry for the coughs. Hopefully, I'll be able to edit all those out. It's just fascinating to me that Apple is gaining market share in the midst of a down economy.
You know, it is, and it's very interesting to watch Apple continue to gain market share as their competition is losing as far as sales go. And so many of these companies, even if they're not saying it publicly, in their back rooms have to be saying, well, we'll be fine. We'll be able to do better than Apple because we have all of these low price.
Cheap crap
computers, and everyone has to pay extra for an Apple machine. They won't want to do that.
Yeah, but those people, you know, there's something that we were actually talking about before the show. Let's talk about that right now. We made the joke. In the piece about Dell, you know, selling off its assets and returning the money to the shareholders. And that's, of course, just a joke, and it references something that Michael Dell said years ago when Apple was considered beleaguered. And he recommended that that's what Apple's board of directors do, that they sell off the company's assets, return the money to its shareholders, because clearly Apple was worthless.
Right. And so then my
funny
comment.
Stuff.
Yeah. You can't write comedy like that.
But, no.
Yeah. So then I commented something along the lines of, how in his right mind could he have said that, knowing that that is going to follow him around for the rest of his life?
And I thought, and I just, to me, that's a really interesting question. And that's why I brought it up here. And it, folks, when we were talking about this, Jeff and I almost launched into a discussion about it right then, but we decided not to because we kind of wanted to have that discussion fresh, so we didn't want to rehash anything for you. And
because we love you.
The thing about your Michael Dells and your Steve Ballmers is that they are true believers in what they do. They believe, like, you know, Steve Ballmer is just absolutely convinced that the only way to properly run a business is to do what Bill wanted to do from the beginning, which was license the software out to everybody and anybody willing to pay. And, you know, and and, you know, make tons of money that way. And, you know, there was that whole joke about everybody knows that there's that the profits are in the hardware. That's what IBM said when Microsoft said they would only license the OS, not sell it.
Right.
Right. And, you know, that was a big joke. And of course, now we're looking at today and who's making the profits in the computer business. It's Microsoft and, you know, Intel and Apple.
Right.
And, you know, people like Michael Dell, who, you know, Dell poured billions into figuring out how to put one less screw in their computers. That's the way I sort of surmise it. And you know, just in other words, they put billions into figuring out how to make their computers cheaper. They stopped doing any R&D on technologies. They stopped doing any R&D on any kind of thing related to the end user unless it involved the price point.
Well, and, keep in mind that Dell's business isn't to innovate and create new products. It's to take stock parts, off-the-shelf parts, and produce commodity PCs as quickly as they can.
But it used to be. They actually did used to do stuff that other people weren't doing. And so did all of the computer, well, most of the computer manufacturers. You know, it wasn't just Apple that was developing different technologies. And, you know, like, was it Compaq or HP that started doing color-coded connectors? That was Compaq, right?
I think it was Compaq.
And, you know, that's a relatively minor thing, but, you know, quite frankly, That was a smart thing. It was something they actually figured out. Something that they were doing to address customer confusion on how to plug in all the various PC peripherals.
And now pretty much all of the PC manufacturers do that same thing.
Do that, yeah, right. They do that same sort of thing. Of course, you know, Apple went one better and actually figured out how to remove as many wires as possible. But that's another issue. But so going back to your Michael Dells and your Steve Ballmers and whatnot, you know, Michael was just absolutely convinced that his way was the best and that everything that he was doing was right, because up until that point, it seemed like everything he was doing was right. You know, but now the problem is I don't think he could see the end game. He couldn't see what's the end result of convincing my customers not to pay anything for my products.
It's a race to the bottom where people expect that when they buy that type of a product, they shouldn't have to pay hardly anything for it.
Right. And, you know, that end result is that, you know, I'm actually looking them up here. Dell's market cap is $21.6 billion and Apple's is $109.9 billion.
Yeah, how about that?
And funny enough, Apple's making money on their hardware, which is why I mentioned that whole IBM Microsoft thing, is that, you know, now the profits are in Microsoft's software, but the profits are also in Apple's hardware, and no one else is really making much of a profit on the hardware.
Right. And for these companies like the Dells of the world that have hit the bottom as far as their prices go, well, now they're in a position where they really can't afford, I would assume, to start innovating. Because then that would cut into their narrow profit margins.
And what are they going to innovate with? They don't control anything. They don't control the processors. They don't control the motherboards. They don't control the peripherals. They don't control the technologies being used to control those peripherals or connect those peripherals. They don't control anything. They don't control anything. Like, do you remember that story? I don't think we talked about it, and it really wasn't anything we covered. It was something I read, but I can't remember. Okay, I'm going to try this again. Hey, Jeff.
Hey.
A couple of weeks ago, there was a story, and it was looking at the OEM business in Taiwan and how one of the OEM people was saying that they think, basically, that it's not that the U.S. companies are outsourcing their construction to the OEM manufacturers, but rather the OEM manufacturers who are outsourcing their sales and branding and marketing to these other companies.
Okay, that's a clever way to look at it.
Well, sort of. It's certainly a an egocentric way to look at it. And I don't even think it's accurate, because the reality is that Gateway or Apple or anybody can take their manufacturing to any other of their companies. Whereas if they, you know, if any one OEM loses a contract, well, you know, they can't just replace it. So
right.
It's not really quite accurate, but it's at the very least an interesting perspective, right?
Right, right.
But that's what, you know, that's what, so how can they end? They can't. These people, the Gateways, the HPs even, HP's a little bit different because they do have such a strong, they have a strong services and enterprise business.
Yes, they do.
And so, you know, they're a little bit different, but your Gateways, your Dells, your Acers, your Toshibas, you know, these companies can't really do much besides compete on price.
Yeah, that is pretty much it, which puts Apple in a strong position because they are innovating and
they charge enough for their computers to make a profit to be able to do more innovating.
Right. And that leaves Apple as a market leader for innovation. Mm-hmm. And oh, what a surprise. Their market share grows even in a weak economy.
Even in a weak economy. Even yeah. in a weak economy. And on that note, we should move on to another subject. And I'm kind of excited to talk about the Audible.
Yes, they're our sponsor this week, which I think is very cool.
It is. And the reason why I'm excited, actually, is because you told me that you wanted to talk about a specific book, and it's a book that I love, and I kind of wanted to hear what you're talking about it.
Okay. So the deal is, one of my favorite books from Audible.com is Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the full version, not the abridged, of course, and it's read by Stephen Fry.
Wait, so there's actually, though, there's both available, abridged.
Yes, you can get abridged or unabridged, and my preference is for unabridged because...
Always.
Yeah, if Douglas Adams wrote all those words, there's a reason for it.
Yeah, well said.
Yeah, so, but you know, listening to Stephen Fry read Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, it felt like Douglas Adams sat down and thought, what would be a really cool story for Stephen Fry to read? Ah, this will be it.
That's funny. And Stephen Fry, if I remember right, he's English, right?
Yes, he is.
And you got to have, there is just so much about the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy that is just British.
Oh, absolutely. And it's clearly something that when read like that needs to be read with that fantastic British accent that Stephen Fry has.
All right, let's listen to a clip.
Oh, let's do.
Although it has many omissions and contains much that is apocryphal, or at least wildly inaccurate, it scores over the older, more pedestrian work in two important respects. First, it is slightly cheaper, and second, it has the words "Don't Panic" inscribed in large, friendly letters on its cover. But the story of this terrible, stupid Thursday, the story of its extraordinary consequences, and the story of how these consequences are inextricably intertwined with this remarkable book, begins very simply. It begins with a house.
Oh, okay, I get what you mean. I think you actually said it. How'd you say it? You said that if Douglas Adams was...
It's like he sat down and thought, okay, what would be a really cool story for Stephen Fry to read? And then wrote it.
All right, well, that makes sense to me now.
Yeah.
So that's really cool. And, you know, we should even explain. This is what Audible does. They take books and... now, they sell some dramatized versions. Like, we were looking through... their Hitchhiker's listings, and this looks like there's some dramatized versions, like the probably similar to what the BBC did a long time ago. That's very famous and popular. And so what they do, they get the books, you get someone reading them, and it's a way to be able to listen to a book or listen to newspapers or etc. Being read, so that you can listen to them on the plane, you can listen to them in your car, etc.
Yeah, it's really nice. And they have thousands, quite literally thousands of titles to choose from. So,
and
yeah.
They're doing, what they're doing is part of their sponsorship with us is that if you go to audiblepodcast.com/appleweekly, that's audiblepodcast.com/appleweekly. That's a special URL just for our listeners.
Yes.
And what do they get?
Well, what they get is a 2-week free trial to Audible Listener Gold, and they get a free book download that they can keep even if they decide that they don't want to continue with an Audible of one of the programs.
Right. So we're going to have a link in the show notes to our special page. But again, you get a 2-week free trial to Audible Listener Gold, and you get a book, and you should probably download The Hitchhiker's Guide because it's great.
Yes. Yeah. I absolutely loved it, and I would not lead you astray.
And when you subscribe, you also get a newspaper for free.
Yes, you
and,
do.
And I know that Dave has listened to the newspapers. I haven't listened to the newspaper myself, and I don't want to mislead anybody, but Dave says that those are done really well too. So,
And I'm thinking that Dave is pretty picky. So if he says they're done really well, they're done really well.
Yeah, we're talking about Dave Hamilton, TMO's president,
and co-host of our Matt Geek Gab podcast.
So do please check out Audible. They're our sponsors, and we appreciate them for that. And
And speaking of sponsors, last week we mentioned Smile on My Mac and the special deal they have for our listeners. That they can get a nice discount on any of the Smile on My Mac products. I just wanted to remind everyone what that URL is so that they can go take advantage of that. So if you go to smileonmymac.com/AWR, there's a whole web page set up right there where you can get really nice substantial discounts on any of Smile on My Mac's products, which includes like Text Expander, Page Sender, PDF Pen.
PDF Pen.
Yeah, they have a bunch of really great products. So,
And they've extended these discounts until May 15th.
Oh, sweet. That's even better.
Yeah, and so we'll have that URL in the show notes too. So there we have it. All right, so there's one other thing I thought we should talk about in the context machine, Jeff, and that's the AT&T deal with Apple.
Oh, right. Yeah, they have an exclusive deal with Apple. Okay, so I'm saying that backwards. They have a deal with Apple that gives them an exclusive on selling or supporting the iPhone in the United States.
Right.
So that's the only company you can go to if you want to have your iPhone work, unless you're going to do some hacking.
Right. And let's go back to when the iPhone was announced. Do you remember it was like, Apple made a mistake by only doing it with AT&T. And was it Verizon or Sprint that turned it down?
I think it was Sprint because Verizon uses CMDA and Apple didn't want to be limited just to that.
Right. So I think it was Sprint. And, and it was like there was a little bit of smugness coming from the Sprint camp that, that wasn't good enough for us. And, now, of course, Sprint is doing – who's their new exclusive deal? They're doing the Palm, aren't they?
Yeah, they're getting the Palm Pre.
Yeah. Oh, did you make a mistake by skipping on the iPhone, guys? Oh, sorry. But it was kind of interesting because it was a little bit controversial at the time about Apple being exclusive with AT&T. And, here we cut to – a few years later and the iPhone is a huge success and here's AT&T really wanting to extend that deal further.
Right. And it looks pretty clear that AT&T's deal with Apple has cost them a lot of money, but it's also made them a lot of money. So I'm assuming that if they do manage to convince Apple to continue with an exclusive carrier deal in the United States, that it will cost AT&T even more.
I think so. Now we included a little joke in the news. We said that it's like he's hoping to extend the deal and something that's going to cost him dearly. And I mean, I think that Well, what I think is that they're going to continue to have to pay the kind of high prices for subsidizing the iPhone that should otherwise decrease over time. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. So, yeah. So, in most situations, you would watch their overall cost for the product deal to diminish over time, but it's probably going to stay at least level.
Yeah.
And not drop.
Yeah, because I think that anybody would be willing to pay Apple just about, well, certainly at least what AT&T is currently paying. Because,
right.
I mean, the fact of the matter is that the iPhone is a big deal and it brings them new customers. And they make more money on those customers because those customers are paying more for their data plans.
Right. And other companies, if they want to get in on this game, well, they're going to have to invest a lot of money as well because they will have to add in the things to their infrastructure that support the iPhone features. Visual voicemail doesn't just happen. That's something that AT&T had to build into what they do.
Right.
And so everyone else will have to do that as well because you know Apple would not go for a setup where their users didn't have a consistent user experience across carriers.
Right. I completely agree with that. So I've got a question for you, Jeff.
Okay.
What would be better for Apple? I think it clearly would be better for AT&T to maintain the exclusive deal. Could Apple sell more iPhones if they worked with additional carriers? Or do they gain more from controlling the situation like they're able to do by having one carrier?
I think that if Apple distributed the iPhone through additional carriers in the United States, that they would sell more iPhones. However, I'm questioning how well they would be able to maintain that consistent user experience across carriers.
Mm-hmm. I actually think they would lose control over the subsidy process too.
Yeah, and that's not what Apple wants.
Plus, God, can you imagine it? Now you go into an Apple store. Right now, it's funny. Buying an iPhone is easier to do in an Apple store than an AT&T store, despite the fact that you can no longer activate them at home.
Yeah.
Still rather do it. We just did it. My wife and I just got her an iPhone. She finally switched, by the way.
Oh, wow. Well, that's really cool.
It's kind of funny. And, you know, we were able to go in and the whole process took about 6 minutes, including the activation process and everything. I think that it would be more hassle than Apple would necessarily want to be doing if they had to support multiple carriers within the Apple stores.
That would be kind of a headache.
Because they're still going to insist on it being activated because, again, that's how they get the control. I mean, that's how they get their subsidy. And I really think that if they had to work with multiple carriers, that they would lose a lot of that control and probably lose a lot of subsidies.
Yeah, that's not what Apple wants. Apple likes to have their control, and I don't see them just willingly giving that up.
I don't either. So, you know, maybe if AT&T realizes that, maybe they won't have to pay as dearly as we were joking.
You know, I'm sure that when everything's said and done, excuse me, I'm sure that when everything's said and done, that they will have come to an agreement that works well for both sides, even though one may be giving up a little more than they would really like, it'll still be a good deal.
Yeah, I'm going to say that when they're going to come up with a deal that works well with both sides and works better for Apple.
Okay, I think that sounds about right.
Well, that was fun. That was fun. Why don't you take us out?
I think I will take us out. And you know what? It's always fun. And if you have anything to comment on, add, or question, send your audio or text comments to awr@macobserver.com. And remember, succinctness is next to steveliness. And that's this week's Apple Weekly Report. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sending us your comments and feedback. Feel free to follow me on Twitter. That's at twitter.com/jgamut.
And you can follow my account at twitter.com/tmobrian, and that's Brian with a Y. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly, the bass is by Boom, recorded just for us, And our sponsor this week was audible.com. And that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com.